Park Row Books and Harper Audio present Once a Liar by A.F. Brady, performed by Adam Verner. He who fights with monsters should see to it that he himself does not become a monster. Friedrich Nietzsche, Beyond Good and Evil, Aphorism 146. Now, Claire and I are sitting in the back of a black car, each looking out our separate windows. I see in the window's reflection that Claire has her hands clasped nervously in her lap, the strap of her handbag wrapped around her wrist. I methodically clench and unclench my fists. Claire reaches over my lap to lay her hand on my thigh, and I feel her looking at me with her sympathetic eyes, hoping I will offer her comfort. I readjust my sunglasses and fluff my pocket square. As the driver turns onto Madison Avenue, a line of similar black cars appears with curbside doors swung open and Manhattan's elite filing out onto the sidewalk. The burgundy awning offers little solace beneath the heavy afternoon sun, and sweaty husbands usher their second and third wives inside the building. I hear Claire whisper, "You ready for this?" as I open the door and hold a steady hand for her to take when she steps out of the car. I can't respond. We are walking quickly down the carpeted aisle of the funeral home, nearly hip-checking acquaintances out of the way. I don't want to talk to anyone. I haven't said a word since we left the house. There's nothing I know how to say. Claire is much more gracious than I am, and she's looking back over her shoulder to coo hellos and whisper apologies. As we get to the first pew, I pull Claire by the wrist to enter the row before me, brusquely guiding her by the lower back as she shimmies down to the middle of the bench. She skids to a seat, and I remain standing to her right. I don't need Claire right now, and I would rather she stay discreetly seated. I tighten my tie and survey my surroundings. I know everyone here, and everyone knows me. I can't remember most of their names, but they know who I am, and they know what I've done. I'm not looking at the coffin because I don't want to look at it and imagine its contents. Claire seems fixated on it. I glance quickly to see that it's tiny. It's tiny and white and lacquered. Juliet must have been 5'9 or 5'10 when she was alive. It doesn't look like she could possibly fit in there. On top of the coffin, white roses and orchids flow abundantly in a huge cascade. Just like Juliet to make everything perfect. Even her death is beautiful. I scan the room, forced to lock eyes with people and nod politely, looking for someone in particular. Harrison Doyle, the New York County District Attorney, walks through the door and gives me an inappropriately large wave. Harrison has been trying to get me to join him on his side of the law, but I'll never be anything other than a criminal defense attorney. He's afraid of me, and he should be. But right now, Harrison is not who I am looking for. Even I can feel it when something in the air suddenly changes, and the mourners terminate their hushed conversations and slip into their seats. I watch as everyone around me sits, and finally, I lay eyes on the person I've been waiting for. Jamie is walking through the doors with his chin to his chest, supported by Juliet's mother, Catherine. Jamie looks up expectantly as he clumsily plops down next to me in the front pew. Satisfied that he has decided to sit with me, I take my seat and lay my arm over my son's shoulder. I think I feel Jamie's muscles tighten slightly underneath the weight of my arm. I imagine he must be uncomfortable, everyone looking to see how he's handling his mother's funeral, and he's not used to affection from his father. Claire reaches her hand over me to tenderly pat Jamie's knee. She knows how to do this better than I do. "You okay, honey?" she whispers. Jamie nods, and a fat tear splashes Claire's hand. I watch the way they look at each other, and make a mental note of what real sympathy looks like. Some priest or minister or whatever he is
Sample complete. Ready to continue?